offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam, a program where we go through Swami's discourses. And in this particular edition, we're going through the 1991 Samukos series. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Brother Harishankar. We've gone through 10 discourses in the series. The one we're going through is the 11th one. Each discourse has been as revealing as the previous one, or even better, if we could say so. And this discourse especially is one discourse where Swami is talking about the various aspects of divinity as man has come to worship over the years. And it's truly fascinating how the Vedas have had such a beautiful and clear idea about creation itself, and it's far more pronounced than what we can even imagine, and what we see as God and devotion and all of that. It's a beautiful tapestry of what the belief system was, and Swami is going through that and giving the different names by which God is referred to, and what do those names stand for, and what do those qualities of divinity stand for, understanding it from the human perspective. Well, before we go ahead and play the clip that we have for this week and see what Swami has to say there, and before we have a short summary of what Swami has said so far, let's invite Brother Hari to join all of us. Sairam Hari.
Sairam Prem.
And, as I mentioned last week, several times in between the discourse, Swami is telling the translator, go slow, go slow. This is very important. Yeah. And more than very important, this is quite complicated. And, of course, we had the pleasure of having Brother Pradeep from the Central Trust with us, who is pretty much familiar with many of these concepts.
Yes.
And if our listeners are not sure whom we are referring to, or Brother Pradeep is one of our seniors from the Central Trust, and he has in fact written a few commentaries on some of these popular Upanishads.
Not just the popular Upanishads, he has gone and done research into what are known as the minor Upanishads.
So right.
Most of the Upanishads we see being spoken about are from the Muktika Upanishad, I mean Muktika Canton.
Okay.
Right, like Shankaracharya, Adi Shankaracharya, from his writings, we have gathered like what are the principal Upanishads. So among the other, there are several Upanishads, you know, the number 1,000. So among them, Brother Pradeep, he researched a few what are known as the minor Upanishads, and he's written commentaries on those. So apart from this, many books on sadhana and etc. So that is why we thought like this is pretty much his home stretch. So,
really it did turn out to be that, you know, the ease with which he could talk about it.
Yes, his insights are pretty valuable in at every occasion.
But you know, it's so beautiful that Swami was standing on a dais and giving this discourse to a very, very general public.
Yeah. You know,
of course, it was a summer course. The primary audience were the students.
Mm.
And when we say students, I think we can well imagine what was our mind frame when we were in that age, you know, 17 to 22 or 24, whatever it is. And I mean, it's can we say that it's very bold of Swami to give a discourse like this to an audience like that?
True. But at the same time, as I go through this this particular discourse and through this particular Upanishad, which is being spoken about in the discourse, I cannot help thinking, but, you know, this may have been perhaps the most important discourse that summer course.
Mm.
Because what it conveys is literally the crest jewel of almost everything that the Upanishads have to say. It is something I was not aware of, you know, like all these years, but the Mandukya Upanishad just has what may be the core of Advaita. Of course, there are more important Upanishads, the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the Chandogya Upanishad. But then, to convey the essence of that in about a few stanzas, like maybe 18, 19 verses, quickly convey, you know, what is the summum bonum, right, of what the Vedas, the Upanishads want to convey. I think really, and, you know, that equation that what you behold as a physical being, right, with all kinds of defects, bodily defects you have, then you have like, behavioral defects, everything that is seen on the surface, to discount that, you know, to set aside and say, like, go beyond that and see the person for who he is. And, like, actually, perhaps in this segment of the discourse, Swami is going to delineate little more about, you know, what are the factors that make a person behave the way he does, he or she does. But the Upanishad is saying, like, you discount all that. In fact, look at when the person is asleep. Or go beyond that, you know, when from the dream state, go a little deeper and look at the person now, where even the dreams have ceased. And at that moment, the Upanishads are addressing such a person as Ishvara. Right? So, nearly, you know, one with God. So, in fact, the Upanishads go like, the next step is to go even beyond that. So, at least here there is consciousness, even if it is undifferentiated consciousness, but beyond that, you know. So the Mandukya Upanishad speaks about a stage that is beyond that, where even the concept of existence, non-existence, like these do not even arise, right? So that is the very large context, and I can't help thinking that here I am in Swami's. If I were to stand in Swami's place, you know, with this knowledge. And here are the people in front of me. If I weren't to give this message across, like as it is spoken in the Upanishads, perhaps I would feel very incomplete about what I'm doing.
Right. I mean, the thing about this particular Upanishad, and especially this discourse, is, of course, it's talking about the highest Advaita. There's no doubt about that. But it is not discounting the other forms of worship and other forms of approach. It's in fact talking about how everything stems from that unqualified unity of everything. And it's saying that it's not like something wrong about approaching God in that way, or something which is not the right approach in that sense. But it is saying that all of this comes in this manner, the way Swami explains that how in the deep sleep state, what is the form that divinity exists in. Or rather, what is the state you are in the deep sleep state is similar to what divinity is in the unmanifest state. And then Swami talks about the dream state, where literally it's like the potential state. It could become anything, but it is in that state of Hiranyagarbha. So Swami is saying it's like the witness who is there in the dream state, who's awake to see the dreams. That's your everyday experience, right? Every night you experience that state. And then Swami says, when you wake up, you see these many forms. And Swami equates that to the Virat Purusha of the Lord. So in that sense, it not only talks of the ultimate unity or Advaita, but it also says that how that Advaita, you know, eventually gives way to all of these different states. That is one. I mean, the other thing which struck me was, when you think that here is Swami addressing this discourse to a, you know, pretty much uninitiated, if you could say that, you know, because when you talk of the Upanishads, the reason why they are so crisp is it is given to people who have gone through that process of, you know, self-inquiry and preparation, as you were saying. But here Swami is talking about that, and you tend to think that here is an uninitiated mass. Why is Swami giving it to that? And Swami was once speaking to some students, and Swami said, see, you wash your face every morning, right? But with the passage of the day, your face again becomes dirty, or again becomes dull. Then what do? You keep washing your face again and again. So Swami is saying the natural course is your face loses its freshness. And the only way to deal with that is periodically keep washing. So Swami said, same is the nature of the mind. The mind by its nature strays away, and it goes by what it sees in the waking state. You know, it goes after pleasures, it goes after wealth, it goes after things which boost its ego. So the only way to handle it is periodically keep hitting it with the truth.
Right.
You know, whether it is, I mean, we always think that only that which I can take and it becomes mine for eternity is worth taking.
Right.
Swami is saying that even if it slips away, it doesn't matter. It's like the face you have to wash every now and then. So Swami is saying, take this truth. And I think in that sense, that's what Swami was doing. That very periodically Swami is talking about these topics, whether or not we could in a conscious state understand it. But I think somewhere it was, you know, getting into at least our options which are available in our mind when we're making choices.
Exactly. Yes. So Swami is like bringing it to the fore, saying that this is not the only way that you need to act, behave and speak. You know, there are there is this other option, so a place to stand in.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so normally the place we stand in is that we are this individual, we need to grab the, much like an animal, right, that this place is all about survival, we need to grab what we can. Okay, and but Swami offers a different standpoint. What, you know, like I'm offering you that, like me, you also stand in that same sacred place of divinity. Now think from there, like what, you know, what do you need? What do you need to do? What are you here for? Right. So that purpose of who we are, it completely depends on our context for life. And Swami is giving us completely different context than what the world traditionally or intuitively has to offer.
Right. And I think the last week, the clip which we played was about the avyakrita aspect.
Yes.
And Swami said that which is the absolute state. The Brahman who is in the absolute state is called the avyakrita, where he's completely formless, and which is similar to, you know, he exists in the causal body and enjoys the state of deep sleep, right? And then Swami was again talking about how he travels to distant places. He has no eyes, but he sees everything. He has no ears, but listens to everything. He performs every act in creation, but possesses no form.
Yes. And also Swami speaks about how, like in the sense, he's called Ishvara because he is the one who has the Aishwarya.
Aishwarya.
So he is the one who, according to your actions, like he is the one who delivers that. So the interesting thing is, yet again we are talking about the same person. Right, and Swami has said several times that indeed in some sense we are the masters of our own destiny. It is we who decide, you know, the course of our life, what we get, what we do not get, except that we have forgotten who said so, you know. So many times Swami used to say, you know, Swami, why did you allow this to happen to me? Swami would say, I am merely the witness. Do not hold me responsible for what happens with you. Very, very rarely do I intervene. Otherwise, we are the one who are making that decision at every point of our lives. But like we tend to forget that we have done so.
Right. Swami was also saying that what we famously refer to as the inner voice, or the voice of God within, or voice of conscience, whatever it is.
Yes.
Swami says it is nothing but the proof of the presence of this entity within, which you eventually have to identify with.
Right.
And I mean, if there is one thing which Swami would repeatedly say, and Swami has in fact guided many people into the art of listening to this inner voice or discerning this inner voice from the voice of the mind. I think this is something which Swami has taught so many people. In fact, I even recall when we were graduating, when we had the opportunity to have a session with Swami, most part of that discourse was about how to listen to the inner voice and make the right choices in your life. Because here was a class of students who are graduating and who are going to go far away from Swami's physical presence. So Swami is teaching them, how do you always do what Swami would like you to do by listening to the inner voice. Interestingly, I think yesterday I was listening to the interview of one of our students, Brother Sanjay Mahalingam. And incidentally, we started the first episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam with him. He was one of our guests. So he was narrating this very beautiful incident, and I think he narrated it even in the Kulwant Hall when he spoke last year, where he was saying that he had to make a trip to Bangalore to collect some data for his research. And he went up to Swami and he gave the whole details, and Swami told, yeah, go and come, you know, finish all your work, don't leave anything, I mean, take your time, finish it and come. So he had got permissions from Swami, which is most important. Then he had got permissions from his guide and his HOD and all of them. So everything was set. So the night before he was actually leaving for Bangalore, he was sleeping in his room, and I mean, he was getting a strong urge that tomorrow I should not go, right? So he was going on thinking that tomorrow I should not go to Bangalore, I think I should cancel my trip. But he was thinking, but I've taken Swami's permission, right? And Swami was pretty, you know, forthcoming in giving his permission, so I shouldn't be worried about it. But this thought was going on coming that, I shouldn't go tomorrow, I shouldn't go tomorrow. But he successfully ignored it, and the next morning he went to Bangalore, finished his work, completely uneventful day, he comes back, and the next day or something, or a few days after that, in a casual conversation, he mentioned to Swami that, Swami, I went to Bangalore and I finished that work. And Swami had a surprised look on his face. He said, why did you go? He said, Swami, I had told you that I'm going for this work. But I told you not to go. He said, no, Swami, I asked your permission, and Swami said, you go and come. No, that was before. But after that, the previous night, I told you not to go.
Right.
Right. And then it struck him that Swami was telling this inner urge which was coming, was clearly saying that there is no difference between me sitting in the interview room in Kulwant Hall and telling you to go, and this strong feeling which comes from within without any rational saying that don't do this. It's the same. And, you know, what a beautiful way to teach that.
It really is. I remember listening to that experience like last year and as you mentioned a couple of days ago, and it struck me that on one hand, how selfless of a guru, right? He's not himself identified with that body, you know. So the physical state, I have given this instruction, but I am present like everywhere. No, I am present as you itself, right? So I am prompting you from within, right? Because here, that word I is being used in a completely different sense from what you and I are accustomed to.
Right.
So that for Swami, that I am not clear what it meant, right? So in that sense, so when he says that I have told you, it doesn't mean that the person who is residing in that body, that is the thing. And again, that unity, right? Like, so Swami is telling so clearly that on the one hand, we can interpret it as saying like, don't just rely on the physical form. It is just as important to be aware of his presence inside you. Right? That is, and here is the Upanishads giving precisely that message. And in fact, reinforcing the idea that actually there is no separate inner voice. That voice is again coming from you, but from a different state. You know, I was trying to understand what all this is. I was reading a few days ago a book called Incognito. So, you know, this speaks about how, like, even as a mental person, right, we cannot identify ourselves as one single person.
Okay.
Like the book starts off with the description of a person who went on to become a philosopher, but at the age of 17, right, like he wanted to become, his passion was to become a great chemist, right, a chemist, a scientist in the chemistry realm, right. So he wanted to become somebody of that standing. Okay, but as things happened, I don't remember what it was, but something happened and he could not pursue that career. Right, and that moment he decided that he has to end his life. And he says that here was this bottle of hydrochloric acid and he's like ready to consume it and end his life. And he says that just as the bottle was being brought near his lips, suddenly he realized that actually within him there are two people. He says like one is a complete idiot. And that idiot is trying to destroy the more sensible person who sees that there's still a future ahead. He says, and at that moment he realized that like, there's a collision occurring between these two. And as he goes on, you know, he says it's born even by neuroscience that in fact you are several different people inside. Right, and what the external circumstances trigger, at that moment, that person arises. And it is true, if you look at ourselves, like, depending on the context, we are different people, in fact. And a person who sees us in one context may not even recognize. He'll say, my God, I never thought that it would be possible for you to do something like this. We don't know, you know, like, who a person is, we say, right? And that's the same way with us, right? There are several different people residing within us. And one of them, and whom we hope to nurture, foster and become more present, is this Ishvara deep inside, who's there as a voice of consciousness, as a, what Swami says, the conscience, right? Who is always delivering the message from the deepest recesses, which are untouched by the circumstances. You know, there, which stand solidly, like Swami says, the truth. So the voice of the truth, and that is coming from deep within, because it's simply not affected by the circumstances.
Right. I was listening to a discourse on the Bhagavad Gita, and this particular person was saying that how literally like a session of psychotherapy or hypnotism, Krishna was taking Arjuna along. So he said, you know, the first thing that he convinces Arjuna of is, you're not the body, right? You're not the body in the senses. That's the first proof that he gives him through all of the various first few chapters. He says that you're not the body. So then he says that, you know, there are two entities, the Kshetra and the Kshetrajna. Right? The Kshetra is the body and that falls away. That's not you. So the Kshetrajna is the real you, right? So that's the next level of understanding, that there is a knower within the body and that is the real you, right? And then he says, eventually Krishna comes and says, you know that Kshetrajna, and that's me. Right? And he says the Kshetrajna in every Kshetra or every broad body is the same person. So that's the gradual understanding that he takes you through. And really, I mean, I think we are in different stages of accepting this, right? Some of us might be probably in that state where we have to an extent given up the idea that we are the body and the senses. Definitely not completely. A little bit of the idea that yes, the divinity lies within, and you know, and that all comes purely by listening to Swami over and over again. Right. As you know, I was reading a explanation about the different pramanas which you talk of, and you know, in the Vedic understanding Vedanta, the different ways of knowing. So you have pratyaksha pramana, Swami spoke about, where it is direct perception. You can directly see it, you can directly hear it, you can sense it through your senses, right? And then you have the inference part, the anumana pramana and the other pramanas, where you infer, come to a logic using your mind, right? And then they say shabda pramana, which means that which can be accepted only by external input. Through your senses and your mind, you can never come to that conclusion. So someone, as you're saying, who is operating from a completely different frame of reference altogether, has come up with these truths, what you call as Shrutis or the Vedas or something. And to accept that Shabda Pramana finally comes up to your faith in that. So that's what it is, you know, when Swami says you're not the body, or Swami says that Antarvani, which is within you, is God. Probably to have that experience, it's going to take a long time. You know, that purity which is required for that is going to take most of your lifetime. But you have, the facts are given to you, you know, in these number of discourses that Swami gives. So you keep them as reference points and you work towards them. I think that's what is happening, whether or not we are able to completely understand it. Right? So I think we'll move on with that. And as we were saying that Swami was, the last part Swami was talking about this inner being of what it is, what we call Antaratma and Ishvara and also Antaryami, which is nothing but the Avyakrita aspect of divinity. So we'll move on to the next clip in that discourse.
Shariramu,
body
into infinite.
Body multiplied by infinite.
Shariramu multiplied by infinite. ఈ రెండు చేరితే విరాట స్వరూపుడు అవుతాడు.
The body into infinite, he is virata swarupa.
Mind into infinite.
Mind multiplied by infinite.
ఇదే హిరణ్యగర్భుడు అవుతాడు.
He equals హిరణ్యగర్భ.
Life into infinite.
Life multiplied by infinite.
ఇతనే విరాకృత స్వరూపుడు అవుతాడు.
He is virakrita swarupa.
ఈ మూడు కూడాను స్థూల సూక్ష్మ కారణములతో చేరినటువంటివి.
ఆల్ దీస్ త్రీ కంప్రైజెస్ ద గ్రాస్, ద సటిల్ అండ్ ద కాజల్ బాడీ.
దేహమునకు సంబంధించినటువంటిది విరాట స్వరూపం.
దట్ విచ్ ఇస్ రిలేటెడ్ టు ద బాడీ ఇస్ విరాట స్వరూపం.
మనకు సంబంధించినటువంటిది హిరణ్య గర్భ స్వరూపము.
దట్ విచ్ ఇస్ రిలేటెడ్ టు మైండ్ ఇస్ హిరణ్య గర్భ.
జీవితమునకు సంబంధించినది అవ్యాకృత స్వరూపము.
అవ్యాకృత రిలేట్స్ టు ద లైఫ్.
ఈ మూడు కూడాను ఒక్క మానవునితో కూడినటువంటివి.
ఆల్ దీస్ త్రీ ఆర్ ఎంజాయిడ్ ఇన్ మ్యాన్.
ఏదో హిరణ్య గర్భుడు ఎక్కడో ఉంటున్నాడని మనం విచారించకూడదు.
వీ షుడ్ నాట్ ఫీల్ దట్ హిరణ్య గర్భ ఇస్ సెపరేట్.
హిరణ్య గర్భుడు మన మనస్థాయిలో ఉంటున్నాడు.
హిరణ్య గర్భ ఇస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఇన్ అవర్ మైండ్.
ఈ విరాట స్వరూపుడు మన యొక్క ఆకారంలోనే ఉంటున్నాడు.
విరాట స్వరూప ఇస్ ప్రెసెంట్ ఇన్ అవర్ వెరీ ఫామ్.
శబ్ద స్పర్శ రూప రసగంధాదులైనటువంటి పంచభూతములు కేవలం ప్రపంచంలో ఉంటున్నాయని కాదు, మన దేహంలోనే ఉంటున్నాయి.
వీ షుడ్ నాట్ కన్సిడర్ ద ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ సచ్ ఎస్ ది సెన్స్ ఆఫ్ టచ్ అండ్ స్మెల్. దే ఆర్ నాట్ ఓన్లీ ప్రెసెంట్ ఇన్ ది నేచర్ బట్ ఇన్ ద బాడీ.
దేహం యొక్క ప్రతిబింబమే దేశము.
ద రిఫ్లెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ద బాడీ ఈస్ ద కంట్రీ.
రిఫ్లెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది ఇన్నర్ బీయింగ్ ఈస్ గాడ్.
రిఫ్లెక్షన్ ఆఫ్ ది ఇన్నర్ బీయింగ్ ఈస్ గాడ్.
ప్రకృతి,
ద ప్రకృతి,
మన దేహమే ప్రకృతి.
ద బాడీ ఈస్ ప్రకృతి.
కొన్ని ప్రాంతములలో దేహాన్ని కూడాను ప్రకృతి అని పిలుస్తుంటారు.
ఇన్ సర్టన్ రీజన్స్ ద బాడీ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ ప్రకృతి.
దేహమంతా మృణ్మయమే.
ద బాడీ ఈస్ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్
ఇదే ప్రకృతి.
ద బాడీ ఈస్ ప్రకృతి.
మన ఉచ్ఛ్వాస నిశ్వాసములే ఈ యొక్క గాలి స్వరూపము.
ది ఇన్హలేషన్ అండ్ ఎక్సలేషన్ ఇస్ ద ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ ఎయిర్.
ఇది గాలి ఆకారము.
దిస్ ఈస్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ ఎయిర్.
ఇది పంచభూతములలో రెండవది.
This is the second one in five elements.
మూడవది అగ్ని.
The third one fire.
మనం కర్మాచరణలో ప్రవేశించినప్పుడు,
when we enter into action,
కదలిక జరిగినప్పుడు,
when we move out,
ఈ కదలిక చేతనే అగ్ని ప్రారంభమవుతుండాలి.
Out of this movement fire starts.
ఒక చిన్న ఉదాహరణ.
A small example.
మనం ఏదైనా ఒక ఎక్సర్సైజ్ చేసినామంటే,
when you start doing exercise,
వేడెక్కుతుంది.
The body will be heated up.
అంతవరకు పోనక్కర్లేదు.
You don't need to go to that.
రెండు చేతులు కొంచెం ఇట్లా రాపిడి జరిగిందంటే అక్కడ వేడి ప్రారంభమవుతుండాలి.
When you rub both the palms, the heat originates.
కాబట్టి వేడి మన దేహమునందే ఉంటున్నది.
Heat is contained in your body.
అగ్ని మన దేహమునందే ఆవిర్భవిస్తుండాలి.
The fire originates in our body.
Water.
Then water.
ఇంకా మన దేహం యొక్క సర్వత్రా వాటరే స్వరూపం.
All over the body, water is present.
కొంచెం పరిగెత్తినామంటే మనలో ఒక స్వెట్ బయలుదేరుతుండాలి.
When we just run to a certain distance,
కాబట్టి ఈ జలమునకు మన దేహమే ఆధారము.
The water is present all over the body as a basis.
ఇది విధముగానే పంచభూతములు కూడాను మన దేహమునందే ఉండటం చేత దీనిని ఒక విరాట స్వరూపుడు అన్నారు.
Since all the five elements are present in our body, it is called virata swarupa.
Samasta shaktilu manavuni yokka dehamulande untunnavi.
All powers are present in human body.
Manavunilo lenatundi shaktilu baita prapanchamlo manaku kanaravu.
There is no power present in man, it exists outside.
Kani manavuni yokka drishti bahirdrishtine aashinchatam cheta bahirdrishtilo undatundi tanalo levani bhramistunnadu.
Man has got external vision and thinks that what all that is from the outer world are not present in him.
బహిర్దృష్టిలో మనం చూడగలుగుతున్నాము.
All that is present in him is seen as something outside.
రాగ భయ ద్వేషముల చేత మన స్వరూపాన్ని మనం మర్చిపోతున్నాం.
Because of attachment, the fear and anger, we have forgotten our form.
ఇది కేవలం నిద్రావస్థ యందు మనకు మనమే సాక్షి.
We are the witness while we are asleep.
మీకు ఒక నిద్ర వచ్చింది.
You have gone to sleep.
ఈ నిద్రలో నీవు ఏదో ఒక ట్రైన్ ఎక్కి ప్రయాణమైపోతున్నావు.
While asleep, you are moving in a train.
ఆ ప్రయాణం చేస్తున్న సమయంలో అనేక స్టేషన్స్ అంతా వచ్చినాయి.
While you are in the travel in the train,
you have seen
so many passengers.
ఇందులో ఎన్ని రకములైన మాటలతోనో ఆటలతోనో జీవితాన్ని గడుపుతూ వెళ్ళావు.
You are spending the time with the play and conversation.
కానీ ఈ నిద్రావస్థలో ఈ రైలు ఎక్కడి నుంచి వచ్చింది?
But in the deep sleep there, where from you have got this train?
కల్పితమే.
It is the creation of your mind.
ఈ స్టేషన్లు ఎక్కడి నుంచి వచ్చాయి?
Where from the station
come? ఈ యొక్క మనస్సు యొక్క కల్పితమే.
They are just imagination of the mind.
ఈ ప్యాసింజర్స్ అంతా ఎక్కడి నుంచి వచ్చారు?
Where from the passengers?
ఈ యొక్క మనస్సు యొక్క కల్పితమే.
It's all imagination of the mind.
అన్ని మనోకల్పితాలే ఈ స్వప్న దృశ్యంలో నీవు అనుభవిస్తూ వచ్చావు.
In the dream, you experience all that created by the mind.
ఇంతే కాదు, నిన్ను నీవు కూడా నువ్వు కల్పించుకుని సృష్టించుకున్నావు స్వప్నంలో.
Not only this, while in dream, you created your own self.
ఇదియే హిరణ్య గర్భత్వం.
దిస్ ఈజ్ ద నేచర్ ఆఫ్ హిరణ్య గర్భ.
కనుక జాగ్రత్త అవస్థ ఎందు,
దేర్ఫోర్ ఇన్ వేకింగ్ స్టేట్,
మనం అన్ని చూస్తూ వచ్చాము.
వి సీ ఎవ్రీథింగ్.
కొన్ని కల్పిత దేశకాల పరిస్థితుల ప్రభావానికి గురి అయ్యాము.
వీఆర్ ఇన్ఫ్లుయెన్స్డ్ బై ద టైమ్ అండ్ ద స్పేస్.
కానీ స్వప్నావస్థలో దేశకాల పరిస్థితుల ప్రభావం ఏమాత్రము లేదు.
But in a dream, there are no effects of the time and space and
circumstance.
We should inquire the differences between the waking state and the dreaming state.
4 గంటలకు ఇక్కడ సమావేశం జరుగుతుంది అని విన్నావు.
You have come to know that there is meeting at 4 o'clock.
3:30 గంటకు సిటీలో నీవు బయలుదేరావు.
You started there in the city at 3:30.
అక్కడ కాలము 3:30 గంట.
There the time is 3:30.
ఎక్కడి నువ్వు బయలుదేరావు? కారులో బయలుదేరావు.
How did you travel? You traveled in a car.
ఇక్కడ చేరటము 4 గంటలకు చేరావు.
You reached there at 4 o'clock.
ఎందుకోసం చేరావు?
Why have you come?
సమావేశంలో పాల్గొనడానికి చేరావు.
You have come here to participate in the meeting.
సమావేశంలో పాల్గొనటం దేనికోసం? కారణం ఏమిటి?
Why should you participate here? What's
the reason? యొక్క సంభాషణలు వినాలని.
To listen to Swami's discourse.
కాలము,
the time,
3:30 గంట,
3:30.
కార్యము, కారులో బయలుదేరటము.
The action, you are traveling in a car.
కారణము, స్వామి మాట వినాలని.
The reason, to listen to Swami's word.
కర్తవ్యము, 4 గంటలు చేరటం.
The responsibility, to reach at 4.
కర్మ, కారణ, కర్తవ్యములు ఉంటున్నాయి జాగ్రత్తలో.
The time, the reason and responsibility are present in waking state.
స్వప్నములో,
in dream,
నీవు ప్రయాణమై ఢిల్లీలో చేరిపోయినావు.
You travel and reach Delhi.
ఎప్పుడు ప్రయాణమైనావు?
When did you travel?
No. ప్రయాణమైనావు అది నో కారణం.
How did you travel? It has no reason.
నువ్వు ఢిల్లీకి పోయినావు ఏమిటో కారణం తెలియదు.
Why did you go to Delhi? You don't know the reason.
కర్తవ్యం ఏమిటి? ఇవి రెండు అర్థం కావు.
What is the duty there? You don't understand.
కాలకర్మ కారణ కర్తవ్యాలు లేనటువంటిది స్వప్నము.
The dream has no reason, it has no time, it has no duty.
కారణ కర్తవ్యముతో కూడినటువంటి జాగ్రత్త.
The waking state has got the time and the reason and the responsibility.
కరుకునే కాలకర్మ కారణ కర్తవ్యముతో కూడినటువంటి విరాట స్వరూపము.
Virata Swarupa has all these three things, the time, the reason, the responsibility.
కారణ కర్తవ్యములో లేనటువంటిది హిరణ్యగర్భ స్వరూపము.
హిరణ్యగర్భ has no
వీటిని మనమే అనుభవిస్తున్నాము.
హూ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ దీస్ టూ?
అనుభవించేటువంటి వాడు ఎవడు?
హూ ఇస్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్?
జాగ్రత్తలో ఒకడు, స్వప్నములో మరొకడు, సుషుప్తిలో మరొకడు కాదు.
దేర్ నో సపరేట్ ఎంటిటీస్. ద వన్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ఇస్ ఇన్ వేకింగ్ స్టేట్.
అవస్థలు వేరువేరుగా ఉండినాయి కానీ
ద స్టేట్స్ ఆర్ డిఫరెంట్.
కానీ వ్యక్తి ఒక్కడే.
బట్ ది ఇండివిజువల్ ఇస్ వన్.
బాహ్యములో అనుభవించినటువంటి వ్యక్తి,
the one who enjoys externally,
swapnamulo anubhavinchinatvanti vyakti,
the one who experiences in
dream, swapnamulo anubhavinchinatvanti vyakti,
the one experiencing deeply,
moodu okkade.
All the three are actually one only.
Kani moodu avastharulga puraskarinchukotam chetane veru veruga manaku gocharistu vachayi.
Because we base our experience on these three states, we consider them varied.
Kanuka desha kala paristhitula prabhavamule మనకు ఇన్ని భేదములకు గురి కారణమవుతున్నాయి.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ద టైమ్ అండ్ ద స్పేస్ అండ్ సర్కమ్స్టాన్స్ కాజ్ ఫర్ ద డిఫరెన్సెస్.
ఐ థింక్ స్వామి వుడ్ ఫర్గివ్ అస్ ఇన్ సేయింగ్ దట్ దట్ వాజ్ లైక్ అ స్మాల్ క్లిప్ ఫ్రమ్ ద మూవీ ఇన్సెప్షన్ రైట్ అండ్ స్వామి ఈస్ టాకింగ్ అబౌట్ ద డ్రీమ్ స్టేట్ అండ్ ఆల్ దట్ బట్ బిఫోర్ దాట్ స్వామి స్టార్ట్స్ విత్ దిస్ beautiful equation of sorts. Swami saying the body multiplied by infinity is Virata, the mind multiplied by infinity is Hiranyagarbha, the life or the prana multiplied by infinity is Avyakrita. So Swami is, I think, putting it across in such a way that the infinite aspect of everything that which you see in the gross state, the infinite aspect of what you see in the mental state and even in the most subtlest form, the infinity of that is what is the divinity as such, what you experience as an individual. And similarly, Swami is saying that these three correspond to the gross, subtle and the causal. And all three forms are conjoined within man. Swami saying that, I think it's something which Swami would often say, how that infinity is contained in this finite form. In every finite human being, there is the infinity itself.
Right. Which is, I think we had heard Swami saying this even in this series of discourses. Right? So, yeah, as we're saying this Upanishad, this Mandukya Upanishad, it is like processing parallelly. On the one hand, the individual, and the other hand, the cosmos, and saying there's no perceptible difference between the two. We're talking about like the infinite being projected, right? So when we talk about the Virat Swarupa, it's the physical or everyday existence of the individual, right? And the Virat is witnessing that, no? So it is like a projection of that infinite into one, like a tiny aspect called the individual. And Swami is giving us the opposite equation. So when you multiply like the Virat by infinite, I mean individual person in the waking state by infinity, and what you get is the Virat.
Right. And then Swami is talking about how the reflection of the body in the external world, the whatever is within the body is what gets reflected. The body is Prakriti. Swami is saying that even some languages refer to the body itself as Prakriti, because it is not anything more than the gross form which falls away.
Right.
And Swami was, the next part Swami went on to say that how every form of power and energy is within the human body. Swami is giving the example of how there is heat within the human body, there is the element of water within the human body. And the problem is, people focus outward in search of these powers rather than concentrate within, right?
Then we have this, the aspect like, okay, Swami is saying that how, like in the earlier we spoke about how the vayus, etc., like the or the pranas, right? So they have their various functions. So much in the same way, over here Swami is speaking about, giving the example of how water is present in us, right? Mm. Or the various elements, they're already present in us. So yet another way of saying that, like what you see in the cosmos, what you see in the human body, there's literally no discontinuity. Like just aspects of that same unbroken thread of divinity. Like earlier Swami referred to the Sutratmaka. Right? Mm. It's like in the Hiranyagarbha, one of the words, one of the appellations is Sutratmaka, as being that one thread of divinity that is connecting everybody. So again Swami is drawing that same, you know, like a parallel, that what you see outside as, or what you say are aspects of divinity having come from the panchabhutas, they are also in your control. You kind of can, as he, Swami is giving the example of like water or heat. You rub your palms, you generate heat. You sweat and you have generated water. Right. So in that sense, there's very little to differentiate between you and the elements. Right.
And then of course comes this part where Swami is talking about how you differentiate between the waking state and dream state.
Yeah.
You know, apart from them being different by nature, what are those qualities which actually differentiate the dream state from the waking state?
So, interesting, like how Swami puts this structure. So, while giving the example of like how you in a dream, like Swami says, like you board a train, you journey through the stations, and so Swami first points out that in this dream, there's no physical existence of any of what you watch, right? They're entirely just the creation of your own mind, right? In the sense that you create your experience in the dreams, or you witness it. And he says that is that's what happens in the Hiranyagarbha state. But in the waking state, however, there are some other factors, like a constraint, that these constraints immediately arise. And these are, Swami says, as place, time and situation. Right? Or later he says, like it is kala, karana, karma and your kartavya. So these kind of structures, they are present in our waking state. And in that sense, it is very important for us to remember this, that on the one hand we say like we are divine. Right, and so suddenly you should, I mean, you know, suddenly if you stand in that place, you might say then there's nothing that binds me. Right, but Swami is saying the rules of the game are this, that when you are in this waking state, this structure exists. There is kala, there is time. Then there is the karma, the task that is at hand. Then there is the karana, there's a certain cause. The causal principle is something that is present only in the physical state. Like if you look at our dreams, sometimes the fragmented dreams that we see or the fanciful dreams which we see, there's very little of cause and effect that is present over there. You know, literally anything can happen in your dreams. They're not bound over there. Right? But on the other hand, if you look at the waking state, suddenly these constraints have arisen. Right? And so our behavior is therefore to be consistent with this. In fact, Swami says so beautifully that Virat is composed of these four. That is, what is the time, right? What task is at hand, right? What is the cause and what is the duty? And it is very important for us to therefore understand that, yes, divinity, you are divine innately. But being in this physical state, right, in the waking state, these are the things you must respect. Must understand the nature of your physical existence. And like we have spoken about this before, you know, like if we look at our everyday existence, it doesn't matter like what kind of intentions I have, what kind of good thoughts, bad thoughts. There is a very rich world that is happening inside me. However, as far as the physical state is concerned, people experience me in terms of my commitments. Like say I am a you know, people in the work sphere, I am regarded as, you know, a person who is working in the trust office. So you are working, a person work with a commitment to radio side. Right? Mm-hmm. A teacher is a person who has a commitment to teaching the pupils. And like this, the various professions that you have,
right.
That is one commitment. Back home when we go, we become sons, daughters, fathers, husbands, wives, right, mothers. So that is like one level of existence for us as commitment at home. Then we are members of society, right? We are expected to vote when the elections come, and we are expected to discharge our duties as citizens, you know, that we don't litter the place, we follow the traffic rules. So our, if you notice, our entire lives are all about commitment, which is why Swami puts that structure of dharma in it. And dharma is given by these, the kala, karma, karana and kartavya. Right, like I think the last segment we were discussing about right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And
right,
we saw that inherently what is right and wrong is something that stands on very shaky structure.
Mm-hmm.
But unless we respect the structure, things are going to go really awry.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why we must understand. You may be divine, you may be beyond right, wrong and you know all that. However, there is a certain structure that is in place. Swami is saying the Upanishads have laid down that this is it. Your physical, the Virat, is a function of these four variables called Kala, time, karma, what your duty is, or what is the work at hand, the Karana. There is a causal principle at work. Consequences are there, and there is something that has led to where you are right now. And then there is Kartavya, the duty at hand, right? The commitments that you are. So these four have to be respected. And we often see people, you know, when they suddenly feel that some spiritual awakening has occurred, and then they feel that, you know, all these duties
don't bind anymore.
Yeah, do not bind anymore. But Swami, if you see, if there's one thing that a lesson that he has drilled into all of us, the students, the staff and all over here, is to give an enormous amount of respect for the work. You know, I recall back when I first joined here in the trust office in 2003. If we stayed even 1 minute beyond 8:30 in 8:30 a.m. in the morning, right? Swami, that was about the time of the interviews. The moment he would come out, he would check that the staff, that is the students who are here, who had come for darshan, are they still here or have they gone for their work? And if they were there, without exception, Swami would come and ask, what are you doing here? You know, you should be in your place of work. What are you doing here? And I remember when I first joined, you know, the main thing that he told all the elders, you know, under whom we were, to whom we were going to report, he said, Veelaki baga pani pattu. In a sense, like, give them loads of work, you know. So, for Swami, that was very, very vital. When do we come for evening bhajans? At precisely like a few minutes before bhajans. You know, it cannot happen that you abandon your duties and come. Yes, there is Swami, there is a spiritual, commitment that we have. But for Swami, that had to be expressed, that spiritual journey had to be expressed in terms of excellence at work or diligence at work. And that Swami could not divorce the two, you know. You would hold that as being very important.
Right. You know, I mean, even as you're saying that, I think even that was the same case with the doctors in the hospital too.
In
the initial years of the hospital, I mean, we know how Swami would literally pump in energy into any project that he would start by, you know, giving so much time to the people involved in the project. We've seen that in every project, you know, be it Swami's music college, or be it Swami's, Dina Janodharana Pathakam when he started, or any of these projects, Swami would interact with those people involved. And same thing with the hospital. The first few days, Swami would go out to these block of doctors, talk to them. And within a few weeks, Swami said, you know, this is not going to happen all the time. Right? You're not supposed to be sitting here. Your worship is at your workplace.
Exactly.
Right? And you have to leave. So, I mean, to look at it that way, I mean, what are you giving up for work? You're giving up the opportunity to be with Swami physically.
Hmm.
You know, as trust boys or as doctors. We would see that around 8:30, you would see that exodus from the, you know, mass exodus from the portico there. Because that's typically what Swami is giving, showing to give that importance to duty. You're giving up sitting in front of Swami to go and attend to your duty.
Exactly.
And that's how much Swami gave importance to that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And, I was reading this explanation that someone was giving. That imagine there is a person who is an engineer who sets up a power plant. Right? So he has created this infrastructure which generates power. But that does not mean that he is beyond power.
Mm.
Even if he touches the live wire, he is going to get electrocuted. Mm. So even though he has created this infrastructure, he should understand the, you know, what are the rules and regulations in dealing with the power that he has created.
Exactly.
To keep away. And he was saying that, in fact, a person of that knowledge will be more aware of what should be done and what should not be done.
Precisely.
Than a common man. So he was saying that that's what happens when you actually get more knowledge. And you might be able to create something which, you know, which is supreme, but even you will remain under the bounds of that thing. And I mean, that's clearly what Swami is saying. And the other beautiful thing that Swami shows when he's talking about this time, task and cause and duty is the clear absence of logic in your dream is a clear sign that the dream is unreal.
Mm.
Right? I mean, that's how we differentiate. You know, going back to that reference I made to the movie of Inception. To give an idea to those people who are not aware, in this they create dreams and they manipulate people within those dreams. So one of the things that the characters in the movie keep telling is, how do you recognize a dream? You will not be able to find out where the dream, that scene in the dream started.
Mm-hmm.
How did you enter the place? Like they'll be sitting in a marketplace.
Right.
How did you come in? Where did this conversation begin?
Mm.
You see, you will not be able to put your finger on that, which means it's a dream.
Right.
So that's precisely what Swami is saying, that you don't know where it started, you don't know when you boarded the train, you don't know how much time you spent in the train, you don't know why you're doing it. And I mean, to look at it, I think even our life in the physical plane is pretty much illogical in many ways like that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think the more logic we bring into our everyday existence, the more we think that this is real and this is real.
Exactly.
Right?
No, because the amount of us that is invested in this, our everyday existence, right?
Right.
Like I watch children at play and I can see, you know, how quickly they can move from one thing to another. Like a very simple thing is, like, you scold a child or a child say something nasty, unpleasant, something to you. Minutes later, the child is back on, you know, on very good terms with you. It's not that they carry that grudge for beyond even a few minutes, right? So they live life, you know, like that. It's done and gone because they're not so invested in their psyche as much as we are. You know, they're invested in their survival. Yeah, food and our possessions, etc. You'll see like a kid and, you know, that seed of the adult is there. Right? But if you see adults, like, sometimes I'm flummoxed, you know, and given our background of what Swami has taught, like, we know just about how much significance to be given to the material life or position, wealth, etc. Like, we kind of know, I hope, that, you know, that you're aware of just how much you are caught up in that. But if I look at some people, I just look at how deeply they're invested in themselves.
Mm.
You know, the position they are in, like what experience they're having in this life, right? If you see that craze for happiness, right? And we seek self-help books, self-improvement books, and everything that is possible, right? Just to hold firm to our individual self, right? Where what is beckoning is a much larger self that is, you know, which is our true existence, right? And in getting distracted so much, like the other, you know, the signals that we are getting from deep within, they are getting lost. You know, that the extent to which we are invested. I think we spoke about this a few segments ago, about the experience of a person. So what happened was, he was walking on a street and then there's a small scuffle with somebody. I think he saw a lady was being, you know, assaulted, and he went to help her, and that moment in the scuffle, he falls to the ground.
Mm.
right? And he falls so hard that he is rendered unconscious, right? And he says that what then happens is that he sees that suddenly he's entered a new existence, right? He's forgotten the old existence, right? He suddenly snaps into one particular moment where he now has a family. He has a wife, he has two kids, and he sees that, you know, every day he's going to work and back, right? He sees himself going through promotions and the birth of another child. He experiences like literally 2 to 3 years of his life. And he says that at one point in the dream, what happens is he comes back home from work late in the night.
Right, right.
And he's sitting there, and his family in the dream, they've all gone to sleep. And he's sitting there, he's watching a lampshade, and what strikes him is there's something off in the shadow that lamp is projecting on the wall.
Right.
And as he begins to think about it, suddenly his mind realizes that it is not in a real, so-called real existence. Right? And the moment it awakens to that, he says that lamp suddenly started distorting, the wall started moving away, and he snapped out. You know, snapped to his the existence in our plane. And guess how many minutes elapsed? He's experienced 2 or 3 years of a lifetime. That is two children, promotions and all that. Right? 10 minutes. In all of 10 minutes, his world had, his mind had created like such a vast, intricate time, you know, that the timeline. We're talking about 2-3 years that happened in a snap. Right, so that thing when I read it really unnerved me as to just, you know, how much we are invested in like our existence. Do we know how real it is? You know, as you said, there are absurdities that in our existence that are poking us from every direction. Like one absurdity which we can point out is this, that supposing our life is supposed to be all the pursuit of material happiness, right? Why is it that the world keeps putting brakes in our way? Like I am a foodie, right? I love to eat food. But why is it that I cannot indulge myself in food to the extent that I would wish? You know, I remember when I was a youngster, I was so fond of soft drinks, right? That my dream was that one day when I grow up, I would work for, at that time Gold Spot was my favorite. I wanted to work for Gold Spot. The only reason was that I would have access to like, like crates and crates of Gold Spot in my life. That was what was my dream when I was young. Right? So if that is what is supposed to be, then why is there diabetes, for example? Right? Why does the world have that thing called you cannot enjoy yourself too much, right? So there is an absurdity right there, right? Because we want to enjoy. The world is saying, I can give it to you only to this extent. People who think that, say, money, right? That is the objective of our existence, to gather as much money. And why is it that when you have gathered money, now you are suddenly insecure? Right? Why is it that the world says, you know, that there is, like I know of a person like who's very, very well off, who's got a vast, empire, industrial empire. So I happened to meet his son, and one part of me was thinking, like, what a privileged life he has, you know. He can, just anything he has at his beck and command. Till I realized that the father and son have to stay separately. The father can visit the son maybe once in 3 months, A, because business, right? His business concerns are that much. And B is the place where this person stays, right? Because he is the son of such a wealthy person, he is very vulnerable to being kidnapped or killed for political or gains. So, what a trade-off, right? So, it's just to see that the world is not linear in that fashion.
Man, exactly. That linearity is what we take it for granted. You know?
Yeah.
Simple thing is, there is no certain amount which says that if I have this much wealth, I can be happy.
Yeah.
Because if it is linear, then the more wealth you have, the more happy you should be.
Exactly.
Right? And there is no logic in that sense. And
yeah.
I mean, going back to that beautiful experience that you were narrating of that person who snaps into that alternate existence. I mean, precisely what we read about the example of King Janaka. right?
Yes.
And Swami talks about the dream being so illogical.
Yeah.
And he just has that one dream which is so logical, right? That one dream which appears so real that he wakes up and he says that, I mean, for once I've had two very, very real experiences. So I'm wondering whether I'm in dreaming the waking state or I'm dreaming the dream state.
Yeah, because in one dream his son has actually died.
Right.
And in the other he sees, you know, that he has a, flourishing family, right? So Swami used to say, you know, like he used to, once he woke up from that, he would keep asking himself, idi nijama, adi nijama. Like, is this true or that true? I can never forget the number of times Swami would keep repeating.
Repeating that.
Kind of rings in my mind from time to time. Like, idi nijama, adi nijama.
Right.
So, very right, you know. Like, that's what Swami is saying. Like, he's questioning that. And coming back to what you mentioned at the beginning, right? You mentioned about how Sanjay Malingam, he experienced Swami unequivocally saying that my existence is not confined to this physical body, and that is a big wake-up call.
Mm.
You know, when you confront Swami, this is something that I realized that there is the miracles, the wondrous experience that you have. One thing is it should shake your world entirely. Right? Not just for, oh wow, a miracle has happened, you know. The fact that it can happen.
Mm.
It shakes up everything that you have held as confirmed, you know,
right.
Belief. That, for example, you have a belief called, I am that person which inhabits this body.
Mm.
Right? And here comes a person that says, okay, like you experience me as this, 5'3" frame, but I am what I call, I is more than that.
Mm.
And that is a first sign that there's something wrong about your feeling of what reality is. That should snap you out of it, if not anything else.
The very fact that even today we speak to people on Radio Sai who talk of the experience now, you know, things happening now,
pretty
much exactly similar to what would happen in Swami's presence.
Exactly.
I mean, that itself is a sign that, I mean, we have witnessed it, right?
Hmm.
I mean, when you talk about the human body eventually dies and it is consigned to dust, we've seen that happening to the avatar's body.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we are listening to stories like this, and we have personally witnessed, some people talking of such things.
Correct.
Clearly, Swami is saying that, there is this state which is beyond time and everything. And Swami doesn't fail to remind us that you are that.
Mm.
Right? It's not something you only worship. It's not something that you adore.
Correct.
But you are that.
Yeah.
That's your reality.
Yeah. It's a strange thing. You know, people ask me sometimes, you know, after Swami has physical absence, do you feel that he's still involved? Like, you know, do you have that same experience as you used to have with him physically? And usually I don't have a straight answer for that. But a couple of months back, something very interesting happened. So for me, like, I have a huge filter as to what I call as a miracle. Like, so it has to pass like several tests. But this one I cannot discount.
Mm-hmm.
What had happened is, there was some task that was assigned to me in the super speciality hospital. So almost every afternoon I had to go from the ashram to the hospital. So that particular day, I think I didn't get enough sleep in the night. I was a little very, very drowsy and unwilling to, go. And going means like I have to board a bus or I have to board a share auto, and it's a little, difficult journey, which on that day I just didn't want to do it. Okay.
And in the summer.
And as I was walking past Swami Samadhi, the Kulwant Hall, and I was just thinking to myself, I don't know why I had this thought. I just had this stray thought that had I been working outside, the company would have provided a car for me. I wouldn't have had this whole thing of, oh, how will I reach that place? You know, I just need to board a car. The driver or whoever it is will take me to my destination. Right? That was the thought I had in mind. And I was just moving towards the Ganesha gate, And at that moment, a car, it passed the Ganesh gate. And the person inside that, they know me very well, okay. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, like, that fleeting second, just as the car was speeding by, the person in the car, he happened to turn and he spied me, like, that angle is such an improbable angle. He saw that and, okay, even then the person can move, okay. Mm-hmm. They decided they would stop for whatever reason. They meet me almost all the time. They decided to stop the car. So then I walk over to them. I thought I'll just exchange some pleasantries and then be on my way. They said, you know, like, where are you going? So I said, I am going to the hospital. And that moment I thought that, you know, they don't have any need to go there. They'll say, okay, you proceed. They said, oh, why don't you sit down? We'll drop you there. I am telling you that like 3-4 such successive improbable things happening, and like it was very clear. Of course, I still feel ashamed of the thought that I had in mind. But I think like that was Swami's way of saying that, you know, I am there. You know, the promise that I will take care of you, that promise still holds, right? Whether I'm physically there or not. So that for me was a very like a heartwarming, insignificant, but in the large scheme of things. But
that's what you know. When you go through experiences like that, one thing is to look at it as an experience and say, oh, that was an experience. But there's always an extension of that. Why okay. Swami gives us, because I was talking to somebody some time back. Somebody who is completely detached from this kind of spiritual thinking and you know, God and all of that. Someone typically working in a country abroad and making a lot of money. So much of what I was trying to tell them, I mean, they were asking me questions. Some of the discussion went into philosophical questions, and I was trying to give them some explanations. They could completely agree with whatever I was saying, but you could see that it's not going to make any change right away.
Yes.
And they're going to go back and do what they were doing. And, you know, that's the sad thing. But if you look at it, that's precisely what happens to within us too.
Correct.
You know, there is one part of us which is dwelling into the discourse. We're reading all of these things. But many times we see that, you know, the membrane is not porous enough to allow this knowledge to seep into your everyday activities.
Correct. Yes.
When you go through life, you find that, you know, where is all this wisdom?
Right.
You know, I read about it in the discourse, I heard it.
Correct.
I think even to our own self, sometimes we are not able to convince, and I think that's what we need to do, and that's what spirituality is all about.
Very important.
You read all of this, you experience Swami's miracles, and then you bring it to everyday life. And Swami is saying that, you know, that infinity, you bring it to your waking state. And as you're saying, that person in the car ceases to be another person for that moment. It was a manifestation of Swami's will at that moment, right? And that's what probably Swami is referring to as Virata.
Right.
In a sense. So I think we'll conclude with that, and this is running out of time. Thank you, dear listeners, for joining us. We have little more of that discourse, probably one quarter of that discourse to before it concludes. Thank you all for being with us. We offer this humble effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. A short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of the day, the Vahini Satsang. But do join us again next week at 7:30 for the next episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam.